bucket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. 6 minutes after the hour on this Wednesday afternoon. Made it halfway, ladies and gentlemen. The weekend is near. Still to come on the program. Well, State Senator David Sessions joined us. That's at the bottom of the hour. And in the 11 a.m. hour, my good friend from Yellowhammer News, Sean Ross, will be with us. So make sure that you stay tuned for that. I don't know if anybody caught Donald Trump on Fox and Friends this morning. Something he said that caught my attention. So if you know these political conventions, not going to happen. If they happen, they're very, 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 very scaled down. Initially, the Democrats are going to have their political convention this year in Milwaukee, and Republicans are going to have theirs in Charlotte. For some reason, we are just hyper-focused on what the Republicans are doing, even though the Republicans, well, they have a nominee, and there wasn't much of a contest there. So initially it was going to be in Charlotte, governor of North Carolina, Democrat. So we were told, locked the state down. Didn't think it was going to be feasible to do it in Charlotte. They made arrangements to do some of those activities surrounding the convention in Jacksonville, Florida. And then come to find out a few months later, actually just a month ago, Republicans, Donald Trump himself has canceled it. The spike in COVID-19 cases. Don't want to play any risk or any gambles there. So this morning on Fox and Friends, well, what are you going to do, Mr. President? How are you going to handle? How are you going to accept the nomination of the Republican Party? And he says, I'll do it on the White House lawn. And he said, it's a beautiful setting. He likes to use that word, beautiful. And then he also said, I have all the military and all the security there. We don't need to move these assets around. We'll save the taxpayers money. Here's a question for you. How many people do you think are going to complain that he's using your taxpayer-funded South Lawn of the White House for a political convention or a political speech? That's going to come up, rest assured, ladies and gentlemen. But it does make sense to do it there, just because it becomes a lot easier of a lift, and it's, you know, you have to move a bunch of stuff around. But will it accomplish this goal? And this is what these conventions have always been used for. They use these conventions as a springboard into the general election cycle. When people start paying attention, everyone's talking about presidential elections and politics, that you build momentum off of it. You have a bunch of big speakers. They give, you know, speeches. Even in some cases, let's look back at 2004 Boston Democratic National Convention. That was the first time a lot of people got to see Barack Obama. I mean, there's a lot of, although these are formalities, these conventions, guys, they do serve an important historical purpose. Will this moment, this speech in front of the White House, will Republicans get any momentum out of that? Will they be able to use that to better chances of elections and re-elections in November? It's going to have to be one hell of a speech, I think, but it could be. What do we know about the media covering presidential speeches? I said that this morning, we talked about the debates and Joe Biden and Donald Trump head-to-head. And I said, you'll see something I think we've never seen in history. And it'll be CNN that does it. This is a wild prediction. Whether it comes true or not, I don't know. But I feel like there's a possibility of this. Because they were talking this morning, I forget where it was, about letting Donald Trump get up on a stage and speak unfiltered to their audience. And we talk about, let's talk about cable news. Let's just focus on that. We know what Fox News is. I think MSNBC has always been the liberal network, and they are anti-Trump by virtue of being liberal. CNN is just the anti-Trump network. It's not particularly ideological. Sometimes it is. Sometimes it's just sheer emotional dislike hatred, whatever you want to use to describe it. That's what CNN is. CNN will be the first network to interrupt a presidential debate while Donald Trump is talking to tell you he's lying. Or they'll do something out of journalistic norms. You'll see a chyron at the bottom of the screen. So here's the question. If Donald Trump gives a speech in front of the White House, are they going to let him speak? Are these national news networks going to let him speak without interrupting him? When's the last time you saw Trump give a whole speech uninterrupted on any of these other networks besides Fox News? Because if you want to watch Trump, you're either watching online, you're watching it streamed, or you're watching it on Fox News. You're not getting unfiltered Donald Trump anywhere these days because the national media think they have some kind of duty, some kind of responsibility to keep to not allow that to happen. They think they made a mistake very early in 2015. If you recall, after Trump announced, he did the Live People's event. That was covered on all the networks. Every time Donald Trump would speak, these cable channels would break away from whatever they were doing to go show you Donald Trump. My guess at the time was, well, this guy will say something dumb, and now in his presidential aspirations. These are fantastic ratings. He is going gangbusters on ratings. Do whatever you got to do. If he's speaking at a high school gymnasium in San Bernardino County, California, get him on that television. And he used it to his advantage because he'd just say whatever. It was a stream of consciousness. It was, people liked it. It was frank. It was refreshing. It was honest. In some ways, it was brutal. But people like it. It drew them in. And it grew the phenomenon. That's what a lot of people in the media think. They think they fed this beast and made it possible for him to be president of the United States. And now they want to make up for it. They want to make up for it by, we gotta fact check this president. We can't let him just talk up there. We got to call our fact checkers. And they're always like left-leaning types. PolitiFact. Whatever. But are they going to let him give his convention acceptance speech without interrupting him? Will the media do that so you can see it? Or will it only be Fox, and Fox will have another record share of ratings? It'll blow everyone else out of the water. Meanwhile, you get the 12-member panel from CNN giving you hot takes about how bad this president is. And then maybe you'll let one Republican or one pro-Trump person on that panel, and they just all beat up on that person. That tends to be how CNN does it. MSNBC, nothing like seeing Rachel Maddow and Lawrence O'Donnell tell you what to think about a Republican convention. Likewise, what do you think that Democrat convention is going to be like? How inspiring is Joe Biden going to be? Is there any hope that you could take a Democrat convention and use that to give a campaign some momentum? Because the fear out there is, well, Biden will say something crazy. He's gaffe-prone. Hey, guys, I know there's a lot of discussion about his mental health and where he is headed and what's going on there. But Joe Biden has never been that sharp on the stump. He's always said stuff that made people scratch their heads and say, what the heck is going on here? Always. It killed his last two presidential chances. There's audio out there. There's all these instances. This isn't new. They seem to be more, I would say, prolific now than ever before. They seem to be more and more of these incidents with Joe Biden now. But we've never really been focused on him like we have now. He is now the Democratic presidential nominee. He is a candidate for a major political party in the United States of America. He's getting a focus like never before, even more so than he was when he was vice president, I would say. Because this is when people tune into politics. Sure, he was instrumental in a lot of things when he was vice president, but when was the last time the vice president of the United States commanded the attention of the whole country? I mean, can you name that? Did you ever see Dick Cheney get up there and give a speech on TV that all the networks covered? Did you ever see that? Did you ever see Al Gore do that? We didn't see George H.W. Bush until he ran for president. What about Dan Quayle? Do we even know where Dan Quayle is in 2020 right now? Walter Mondale? You can go on and on. Vice presidents, they play different roles in what we think. Yes, they are a heartbeat away from the presidency. There's no doubt about that. But Joe Biden's going to get a level of scrutiny he's never gotten before. It may not come from the media, but will come from the public. It will come from the right. I mean, as at a disadvantage as the right is with the media and not really having as much media on their side as the Democrats have, it's still out there. It's still something. It's still very important to the whole conversation. But I think this level of scrutiny with Joe Biden is going to be something he's going to have to try. He's untested. Even up there on the stage with all those Democrats, right? We saw him up there. He didn't do well in some of those debates. And here's what Joe Biden, if I'm looking at this, I'm a political consultant, and I'm talking to Joe Biden. Here's the problem you have with Joe Biden. He probably has people trying to tell him what to do and how to handle himself and what's best for his campaign and what's in his best interest. But he also is like, well, I've been doing this for 500 years. I know more than you, kid. I know how to handle myself. And he doesn't listen to what his advisors are trying to tell them. And then he gets in front of the cameras and he totally blows it. And he's terrible. That was the mistake of Joe Biden very early on. That was what he had to deal with. That's what his campaign had to deal with. That's why he did not win Iowa and New Hampshire, because he looked lost. But we're really where he came to be. All of a sudden, you get to South Carolina. James Clyburn comes out. James Clyburn endorses Joe Biden. He wins the South Carolina primary. And then all of a sudden, everything just kind of comes together. And the default candidate is now the presidential nominee, or the presumptive nominee. They will be settling that in the convention. So that's how this is playing out, and I wonder if Biden can use the Democratic convention as a springboard, or can Trump, if Trump gives it in front of the White House a lot. Well, where will Joe Biden do this? Will he do it from his basement? That remains to be seen. Let's take a quick phone call. Let's hear from Larry from Mobile. Let's talk about Joe Biden. Larry, what's on your mind?
I don't think he'll be president in 6 months. I think they get him in office, or try to get him in office, and then he turns around and says, I've got this issue, and I'm not going to be able to be president. They've made three or four statements in the last couple of months that whoever he picks as a vice president is going to have to come in and be ready to run the country.
Well, I would say this, though, Larry. When you get that much power, and power is very addictive, very intoxicating, I think he'll stick around longer than 6 months. But I don't think there's necessarily a notion of plan in place right now. Well, we'll just get Joe Biden elected, then whoever the vice president is, that's who will really be the president. That's how we do this. He's just a Trojan horse or something for our big progressive master plan. But he's always wanted this job. This is what he has always wanted to be. He may not last the whole term. I don't know, but I think he sticks around a little bit longer than just a few months.
We're hoping and praying he don't make it.
Well, I think a lot of people are. Thanks for the call, Larry. But he's not the best candidate. He has baggage. Plagiarism. Remember the plagiarism scandal? Remember he plagiarized a member of parliament and then denied it, but then he had to step aside? I wonder if that comes back up. We're going to take a timeout. We will return. This is the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound, and no one could change my mind, but Mama tried. They began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. River and we see the British come, and there must have been 100 of them beating on the drum. They stepped so high and they made the bugles ring. We stood beside our cotton bales and didn't say a thing.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106-5-251-343-0106 251-343-0106. 6. Some other things I talk about. Democrats are going to meet the discussion about renaming the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma. On the heels of John Lewis's death, there is a push underway. Edmund Pettus, he was a Confederate officer, later active in Alabama politics, some ties to some unsavory elements at the time, the Ku Klux Klan, whatnot. But there is a push. Why are we walking across a bridge named for this guy? Let's rename it the John Lewis Bridge. Fine. That sounds like a good idea, but there's pushback against it. Now, I don't have a dog in this fight. I don't live in Selma or Dallas County, but I understand why there are people that don't want this to happen. There is a sentiment that walking across that bridge with a namesake for such a guy is kind of it itself is a protest gesture. That Edmund Pettus is rolling over in his grave, knowing that the commemoration of the Bloody Sunday holiday or incident is done on a bridge named after him. There's a lot of people that believe that. And then renaming the bridge, well, that would do away with that. So for that reason, a lot of people don't want to rename the bridge. The locals there don't want to rename the bridge. However, here's the way it's playing out, because every time the national media get involved in something, they don't understand the nuance, they don't understand the politics on the ground. It's those racist people in Alabama that want to keep that bridge named for who it is because Alabama. And that's the only reason it could be. You need to rename the bridge. But it's much more complicated than that. It's a very complex issue. People have reasons for that. Here's what I would argue. Well, the Democrats down there are meeting about this. So there's going to be a serious discussion about this. Why do you want to name a bridge, an old bridge built in 1940, that's going to have to be replaced or decommissioned? There's no way it's going to last another 100 years or whatever. Why would you want to name it for a civil rights hero like John Lewis? Why would you want to take an old, rusty bridge and name it for John Lewis? Why not build a new bridge? When that new bridge comes along, call that the John Lewis Bridge. And then you have this, you can compare and contrast the old bridge and the new bridge and the relics of yesteryear versus today. And what I think will probably have to happen at some point is they'll have to do something with that bridge that exists now. It used to be Highway 80, a big east-west thoroughfare there, cuts through the middle of the state. It goes from Phoenix City, it crosses from Georgia and Phoenix City. It goes all the way to York, Cuba, and on to Meridian, Mississippi, to the west. And you go through Selma, and that's where it crossed the river there, the Alabama River. At some point, even though there's a new bypass around Selma, most traffic doesn't go through downtown Selma anymore. People going back and forth from Montgomery to downtown Selma will have to have a way to cross the river or build a new bridge. They're going to have to someday. That's whose namesake should be on that bridge. And you decommission it, maybe you just make it open to foot traffic only, although I don't know, many people many pedestrians are going back and forth, but it is a historical landmark. It's got to be preserved, so you got to figure out a way to do that. But I've had this discussion before about this, but it's back in the news on the heels of the death of John Lewis, the former congressman from Georgia, marched with Martin Luther King across the bridge there. It's back, and there's some serious discussions about renaming that bridge. So that's on the radar. Some other things going on. Joe Biden will debate. She said on Fox News yesterday, there will be a debate, guys, between the two. She says Joe Biden is ready to go. Jill Biden, I guess she's who they sent out to be on Fox News. A very curious surrogate for the Biden campaign. But we were talking about this a lot in the last segment. Once he comes out of the basement, how is he going to react? How is he going to present himself? How will people react to him? And will he be able to keep it all together? He's never been one to be able to do that. He's always had his struggles with gaffes and the like. And there's any reason to think he won't. But they're going to have to get him to get it together. I don't know what it is. He's going to have to start listening to the people around him that surround him. But all indications are that whole talk about no presidential debates seems to be that is not going to be the case. We had Tom Friedman in the New York Times saying no, he doesn't need to debate Trump at all. Why even acknowledge him as an equal, as a competitor? Why even do that? Why bring him to your level? And why give him the opportunity to be unfiltered? Seems like a losing proposition to me. It's going to raise some red flags if he tried to avoid a debate. They got to do it. All right, guys, we will return. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Living on the road, my friend, was gonna keep you free and clean.
I hear Richard Best picking on that red guitar. So gather round, now gather round, chill and be down. Well, just get down, chill and get loud. Well, you can be loud, yeah, and be proud. And you can be proud, yeah, and I'll be proud. You will, because South's gonna do it again.
Hey, welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5, 35 minutes after the hour on this Wednesday afternoon. Still come on the program today. Yellhammer News is Sean Ross. He joins us in the 11 o'clock hour, so please stay tuned for that. I want to introduce my next guest, very kind to come on our first week. He represents you folks in the south part of Mobile County. State Senator David Sessions joins us on the line. Senator, how are you how are you this morning?
Doing well, Jeff. Glad to be with you.
Senator, let's get right into it. Let's talk about how are things going for you and your family. How are you dealing with this whole this COVID-19 stuff? Everything going okay?
Everything's going okay, Jeff. You know, it's certainly a new day, and we're taking it serious and being as careful as possible. But I tell you, I'll be glad when we get some type of resolution to this, where things can get back to as normal as possible.
How is your how's your district dealing with it? It does seem like we're trending in a normal direction, but maybe not quite at the breakneck pace a lot of people would like.
Yeah, we are. I'm glad to see the businesses. You know, all the businesses are cooperating and trying to get people to wear their mask and do the social distancing, do the right thing. You know, you're always going to have spots and people that just don't want to follow the guidelines, but you know, that's to be expected. That's life. I mean, that's just the way it is in everyday life also. So, you know, but for the most part, I'd say we got 98% of the people down here trying to do the right thing and be as careful as possible.
Yeah. And you know, it's a lot of people may, you know, complain about having to wear a mask and all these guidelines, but it seems to me for a lot of people just being out and about very anecdotally, going along with it for the time being.
Yeah, and you know, and Jeff, I'm not crazy about the mask order or anything, but look, you know, as for our own good, as for our safety, I don't like wearing one, but I do when I go in a public area or around people that's not immediate family. You know, it's a lot better than shutting down the economy. You know, we don't want to go back there. We don't want to pick winners and losers, because, you know, that didn't work too well either, because basically we were pushing everybody into big box stores and not giving them choices. So I think the mask ordinance is much, much better than having to go shut down barbershops and you know, nail salons and things like that. Just use a lot of common sense. Stay clean, and if you're sick, stay home. Or if you feel bad, go get tested. You know, that's just, I think that would be the best thing for everyone to do.
Sir, is it clear to you though what the ultimate goal would be, what the all clear is? Like, if we go along with this and we're working toward a goal, and then we could get back to normal, which a lot of people would be okay with, What is that? What does that need to look like?
Boy, that's a tough one there. You know, fortunately for this particular virus, it seems like the young and the healthy do pretty well. You'll have an occasional instance to where they don't, but mostly it's attacking the elderly, and it's really giving a lot of people some hard time, because I've had some good friends that have had a pretty rough time, and I actually have a Senate colleague who is basically fighting for his life on a ventilator right now over in Lee County. State Senator Randy Price, we want to make sure we all remember him and keep him and his family in our prayers. So, you know, it's a real, real unusual one. But I think if we get these numbers way down to where you're getting very few infections, and you know, of course, we're going to have to bother CDC and our, you know, those folks. They'll come up with a plan. Don't know if it'll be the correct plan, but, you know, we're going to have to look for them to guide us. Unfortunately, you know, it's just not going to be a magic thing out there until they come up with either a vaccination or something that you know, something that'll work, that'll stop it in its tracks, you know. So we may be in for a long, long process. You know, good Lord willing, our scientists and our doctors come up with a vaccination that works and is safe for people. So, you know, hopefully that's getting close.
Yeah, that seems to be the light at the end of the tunnel. It's not so much all these measures we have in place, and this is kind of my assessment of it. They're preventative measures. We're trying to lower the curve. But the ultimate goal, you'll never get there until we finally get that vaccine.
I think that's, unless, you know, until we get to where we're at with, you know, the other strains of flu, I believe we're going to have to be cautious. And, you know, a lot of the stuff that we're doing now is probably things we should have been doing for a long time, you know. Wash your hands more often. Use some hand sanitizer. You know, if you have sniffles or coughs, you know, maybe wear a mask to protect other people, because, you know, there's a lot of germs floating around in the air. But at the same time, you know, you have to kind of have some immunity to some of these things. So, you know, I'm no doctor, so I you know, that answer is beyond me.
Well, let's turn the page. What about, you know, the push to get schools back open? I know in Mobile County they're delaying it for the first that first 9 weeks, but, you know, statewide, looking at it, where are you on that? Where do you think we ought to be? What we're doing here reasonable?
I believe, given the circumstances, it is. Let's see, you know, what the numbers are in 9 weeks. You know, I think a lot of these young people have gotten it and never knew they've had it. So, you know, I know the Mobile and Baldwin County, our teenagers have had kind of a pretty big explosion of it. You hear of a lot of the young people having it, but they seem to do fine. You know, they're sick for a couple of days and they're back at it. So, you know, that group, the herd immunity. But the problem is, you know, Jeff, you've got grandmothers and aunts and uncles and elderly that may have a health issue that's guardian or taking care of these children, and you know, they may not know they have it, have a little sniffle and give it to someone that's going to, you know, succumb to it and wind up in the hospital on a ventilator. So it's really a tough virus because of the way it died. It's really baffling people. And I know I sit here and scratch my head because you hear of a 70, 80, 90-year-old person that has it and does fine, and then, you know, a 62-year-old person's in the hospital on a ventilator for like 2 or 3 weeks. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be a challenge. It's going to be a real challenge.
Yeah, it just seems there's so many unknowns and having to deal with them, and because it affects everybody differently, so you have to, in some ways, you have to kind of prepare for, if not a worst-case scenario, but a bad-case scenario, because you don't really know. The unknowns present you these circumstances.
You know, we're unclear of whether you can be reinfected. You know, the antibodies, do you build up an immunity and have an antibody there that's going to keep you from getting reinfected? It's going to be a tough one to beat.
We're joined by State Senator David Sessions here on the Jeff Poore Show. Senator, let's talk about economic issues. We're talking about opening back up. Last time we talked while I was doing the radio show up in Huntsville, you talked about seafood and the restaurants closing and how that had impacted your district in a big way. Now that restaurants are starting to open back up, kind of what are you hearing?
Yeah, you know, when they started first opening back up, it put a rush on everyone in the seafood industry. But then, you know, I guess it's kind of, you know, been tempered because of the distancing and the restaurants not going back full bore. So you had a little uptick for just a little while, and then the pipeline got full again. So now you've gotten another slowdown. So our seafood folks are really struggling. Some of them are really struggling. Of course, you know, the good thing about a lot of our seafood is it's caught on these bigger boats and quick freeze, and it's frozen on the boat before it ever comes in, so that's a good thing. So it'll last longer, and once they get it on shore and get it in freezers, but that's expensive, you know. So how much to their bottom line is that adding to have to hold it another 6-8 months, and, you know, till things get opened back up? Of course, the upside is the other pipeline, that grocery stores and those type things, they're seeing an uptick in people buying food to cook at home.
I mean, that was kind of the dynamic with the beef prices. When the restaurant shut down, well, the high-end beef, it suffered. But then the grocery store shelves, they couldn't keep beef on the shelf.
Well, you know, the meat packing facilities had an issue with labor and virus going through them. They actually shut down some some of our packers, and that really messed up the pipeline. You know, I'm a cattle producer myself, and Ruth, we just you know, we had to sell some calves and hated to have to do it, but took probably a 30 to 40 cent a pound hit on those. But on the same time, I, you know, it was a farmer and trying to look ahead, I took advantage of the lower prices and bought more brood cows. So if it does ever straighten out and prices go back to normal, there's a potential upside there. A lot of people don't have that that opportunity. You know, they bought calves to graze and sell them when they got to a certain size, and they're pretty much having to sell them regardless. So they're really getting hurt.
Well, there was this action by, or there was this push for action by the Department of Justice. I think they ultimately did look into it. All the price manipulation, any of that. From your perspective, did you think there was something going on there that the meat processors or the packing plants were kind of playing fast and loose?
You know, it's a possibility. You know, anytime you get a shortage of something, you're going to see the price on the shelf get a little out of range. I know it did it with hamburger meat, and some of the other cuts of meat got really, really high, but starting to come back down some now, a little bit. So hopefully that portion of it will level out, because, you know, that's the last thing anyone needs to do is take advantage. You know, Jeff, I don't know how familiar you are with the Gulf Coast, but, you know, we've had it for years down here with hurricanes, and you get a bad hurricane come through, and then these, all of a sudden, the gas stations that have a generator, they go and double their price of gasoline. So, you know, there was actually legislation passed to stop those type things. So, you know, hopefully not too much of that's going on. It could have been a little bit of that, but I don't think it was a huge issue. I think it was more of an issue of just not having it available, and the price reacting to the availability.
Because the cattle producers, as far as I understood, you had a really low price on cattle per head.
Extremely low.
Yeah, and it was almost, and but that wasn't reflected on the shelves.
No.
And did you talk?
No, not at all.
When you talk to these people,
it should. Once we get things back going and the packers get back going like they should go, we should see some better shelf prices. I certainly hope so.
But there was this situation where they weren't packing it for restaurants. They needed to pack it for retail. And it just took some time for their systems to catch up with where the demand was. You no longer needed to ship it for like wholesale or in bulk for restaurants. You needed it packaged or shipped for away for a grocery store or a retailer. And then while that sounds simple, there's a lot more involved to it.
There is a lot involved to it. You know, you've got companies trying to shift and do things, and I know you've seen some of the news articles where Ford or General Motors are shifting over some of their assembly lines to try and make respirators and things such as that. So, you know, all that stuff takes a lot of time and money, and the equipment is probably not very cheap. Any of that can add to the bottom line for the consumer.
Hey, Senator, we're out of time. We got to leave it there, but I do want to thank you for making time, and let's get you on again real soon.
Sounds good. Maybe when all this is over, I can come into this station and sit down with you.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. That was State Senator David Sessions here on the program. We got to take a break. We will return. This is FM Talk 106.5.
There's always a stage and a beautiful bay.
Chihuahua is my Everest, and the Coosa is my now. Alabama's where I was born and raised, and I think I'll stay a while. We sing about sweet home and Dixieland delight. We tell stories about what goes on in Montgomery at midnight.
Hey, welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106. 56 minutes after the hour on this Wednesday afternoon. Yes, we have made it halfway. Getting close to the weekend, ladies and gentlemen. Or at least for me, it's a monumental endeavor to make it through this week. Your first week in a new market. You're learning your way around the building. You're learning what buttons to push. Live radio, always an adventure, especially somebody who's still a little green at it. I've only been doing this for a little while. I'm not the experienced professional like my colleague Sean Sullivan there, or even the guy holding my hand today, Dalton Orwick, who I am very, very grateful for. Let's take a quick phone call here. Let's talk to Fred about the airport. Hey, Fred, what is on your mind?
Hey, man. Welcome to Mobile, first of all.
Hey, thank you. Thank you.
Glad to have you here. So I live out by the current regional airport, and something that they said earlier was they talked about noise. The thing was is that when the Brooklyn was at where it's at now, there was a lot of noise associated with aircraft, so you had a lot of prop jobs and a lot of that. So that's one reason why the airport ended up out here. So you have to remember that there's been a change from propeller driven aircraft to jet-powered aircraft, and then they've also made engines a lot quieter. So that's one reason why it was moved out west, because it was further away at the time from the population center. So that's one reason. My concern with where they're doing the downtown airport now, though, is that, okay, so you put an airport there, the traffic
right.
I heard somebody allude to earlier.
The traffic could be a problem. Hey, Fred, we got to leave it there. I'm sorry, we're just up against a break here. We will return, though. This is FM Talk 106.5.
So the story ends, we're told. I don't need your prayers, it's true.